The rest, she had failed. Perhaps it would have been best if she truly was in that cask. Anise, Theron said, pressing her head to his chest. It was only a dream. A nightmare. You are safe. Tears bit at her eyes, and she hated them almost as much as herself. For they were both filled with so much weakness, weren't they? A queen couldn't cry, couldn't feel sorry for herself. No matter what happened, she needed to be strong. She thought of her cousin, Rhea, who had defeated Uncle Griswold's entire armada, who had never wavered before the might of her enemies. Why couldn't she have been more like her? Anise, stop. I know what you're thinking. Taryn's voice was soothing, but even that she didn't deserve. Of course he knew what she was thinking. His closeness to her was a double-edged sword at times. Not even her thoughts were her own. She heard murmurs nearby, and she wondered how many of her people had heard her cry out in her sleep. She wondered what they all thought of her now. Orange firelight played along the edges of Taryn's strong jawline as he watched her. After the first day travelling in the darkness of the tunnels, the torches they'd brought had dried out enough to paint with oil and light using flint. Now, their light danced across the tunnel's rough ceiling and walls. Stop, he said, stroking her hair with hands that could be as gentle as they were strong.
When they needed me most, I faltered, she said.
Yes, Taryn said. You did. She couldn't help it. She flinched, surprised by his words, which held no comfort. Good. Good. But I did not, Taryn said. Just as you did not when I faltered.
I don't want to be the type of woman who requires her man to save her.
Taryn chuckled, and she leaned back to glare at him.
Something amusing.
Yes, he said. You think I want to be the type of man who's always saved by his queen lover? He shook his head. Neither of us are those people, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't save each other when we have the chance. You've saved me countless times, and I won't apologize for reciprocating. Now, tell me about your dream.
She did, and when she had finished, she waited for Taryn to chide her for being affected by something that, when analyzed now, seemed so ridiculous.
I don't know what it means, he said, but I have a guess.
His tone was serious, his eyes shadowed.
Tell me.
I think it means you are willing to die for everyone we lost, to walk the same bloody path they were forced to follow.
I am.
She refused to say it aloud, for fear that it would sound as if she were painting herself a martyr, though it was she who'd survived and not them. Don't say anything, Taryn said. Just know you are not the woman who froze up out there. You are the warrior queen of the north, slayer of ice bears, defender of the realm.
He lowered his voice as he continued.
Sejonius was always proud of you, even at the last. And you are the love of my life, the keeper of my heart and soul. Never forget that, my queen. Never.
In the tunnels there was no night and day, only the times between sleeping and waking. The smoke from the torches had nowhere to go, clinging to their clothes and skin and hair, making them cough and struggle to breathe. Eventually they'd been forced to extinguish the torches until only one remained— a beacon of light at the fore of the column. Scared children whimpered. Husbandless mothers or wifeless fathers soothed them. Soldiers still wearing blood-stained armor clanked as they walked. Time melted into stone, melted into flesh and blood. For a time, Zelda volunteered to carry the torch. Anise joined her at the front, a gap between them and the rest of the column, giving the smoke a chance to dissipate in their wake, leaving behind only an acrid stench.
The tunnel has no end, Zelda muttered.
She'd said the very same several times over the last few days, and Anise was beginning to agree. For all they knew, it was curving slightly, sending them in the wrong direction, weeks away from spilling out into Raider's Pass. Or they could be moving further east, where they would eventually tumble into the white-capped ocean.
"It's only because your legs are so short," Anise said, trying to overcompensate for her own fears with a jape. "Perhaps Terin should carry you."
"Like a babe in a mother's arms? Not if the entire horde were chasing me. Do I look like a woman to be carried?"
"Yes," Anise said, and her aunt snorted. They walked on, several moments of comfortable silence beating in time with their hearts. Then Zelda said,
"You are my niece."
Though the statement wasn't more than a simple fact that didn't need to be voiced, Anise knew what she was trying to say in her Zelda-like way.
"You are like me. You are strong. You are a warrior."
"Don't you start too, Auntie. I've already had the lecture from Terin."
"Good. You should listen to the big lug. And you should listen to me."
"Auntie,
I will open your ears myself if I have to."
Anise clamped her mouth shut.
"I was a girl of 8. Father said I had a gloomy disposition."
"Gloomy? You? Never."
"Amusing. Your wit has no end. Shall I continue?"
Anise nodded.
"There was a man. Bare black boots."
"The one who raised my brother? Bane?"
"The one and the same. Back then he was a huntsman in the castle. There was something peculiar about him, so naturally I enjoyed his company. He made me feel like a human being, treated me like an adult. He had a beautiful white wolfhound. When she hid in the snow, you couldn't see her, so long as her eyes were closed. But when she opened them, they were pools of crystalline blue, as piercing as a cloudless sky. Her name was Sarah Naya. Naya for short."
The sound of her aunt's voice was calming, helping to hide, if not erase, the last weeks for a few blessed moments.
"Something happened one day. I witnessed it. My brother, your father, being his arrogant, foolish self, Naya attacked him. She was only protecting Bear and me."
Despite the calming timbre of her aunt's voice, Anise felt a twinge of dread. Stories that involved her father rarely ended well for anyone but him.
"What happened?"
"My father was forced to have the dog put down."
Anise's heart beat firmly in her chest.
"Bear did it himself."
"Why are you telling me this?"
"Because I was weak. I told the truth, but no one listened. And then I just let it happen. I should have done more."
"You were 8. A little girl."
Zelda shook her head.
"Tell me, what kind of girl were you at 8? What would you have done?"
Anise tried to remember being that age. By then she was already wrestling the boys in the yard, and winning. In her heart, she'd always heard the names they often called her, but she'd never let it show. But when it came to her father...
I don't know."
"Bollocks. You would have thrown yourself in front of that dog before you'd let anyone kill her."
"Auntie, you don't know that."
"Frozen hell if I don't. I know I was an eccentric, and that's putting it nicely. Aunt to you growing up. But I was always watching you, wishing I had been more like you and less like me. But then again, I didn't have a woman like Sabria as my mother."
Anise frowned.
"My mother rarely spoke to me. Now I know why she ignored me, but I didn't learn anything from her."
"And yet she is in you just the same. Did you know I never really stood up to my brothers until I met your mother? It took a different kind of strength to save the North from your father's oppression. Your mother's strength. You have that strength in you. And mine. That makes you undefeatable."
Anise felt like crying, but she was done with tears. Still, her aunt's story didn't change anything. All it showed was that even women of the North showed weakness sometimes. Just like she had at the penultimate point of the battle with the Horde, which could have been disastrous if not for the actions of her loyal supporters. Their footsteps scraped and echoed, accompanied by the harsh intake of breath between her lips, as the miles of darkness took their toll on Anise's lungs.
"Why did you tell me this story now?"
Her eyes found her aunt, but she only shrugged.
"Because I'm a mad old woman, that's why. Who knows why I do anything I do?"
Anise didn't laugh, for she knew it was a lie. Zelda had been underestimated her entire life, and yet she'd always survived, always emerged victorious. If anyone should be her role model, it was her self-proclaimed, mad, eccentric aunt. She opened her mouth to tell her just that when the ground yawned open before them, rocks tumbling into an abyss. Anise lunged forward, crying out, scrabbling at anything she could get her hands on as her stomach shot into her throat. One of her hands found the opposite edge of the chasm, and she dug her fingers in as she swung her opposite hand around to find purchase beside it. Darkness collapsed upon her as the torchlight skittered away like the rocks that had shattered beneath her weight.
"Auntie," she thought, but couldn't give voice to the idea, her very breath stolen by the effort it took to cling to the rough stones.
Heavy footfalls rang out in the darkness, and then a light poured over her.
"Anise," Taryn said, his voice as rough-textured as she'd ever heard it. "Hang on. I'm going to get you."
Though she didn't want him to risk crossing the gap, she still could say nothing, her teeth grinding together in determination. Her toes were balanced precariously on a finger-thin lip of rock, but they kept slipping even as she tried to dig them in. Carefully, she managed to twist her head around to look down. At first she saw only inky grey, and her heart shriveled like a grape left in the sun. She didn't even scream. But then a pair of white eyes looked up at her. Like her, Zelda's jaw was set tightly, broad and firm and unrelenting. Garrick determination, Archer had always called the expression, though with his softer features he had never been able to stake any claim to it. Zelda clung to the rock 10 or so feet below Anise, having somehow found the barest shoulder of rock to balance her toes on. Her fingernails were dug into the narrowest of crevices. Anise knew in an instant that time was of the essence, her aunt's arms and legs already quivering from the effort. A weaker person would already be gone. Her aunt's story came back to her in a rush, surrounded by other memories too, so many horrible, wonderful memories assailing her like a swarm of bees, all boiling down to a single point, a single image. Her mother, Sabria Loren Garrick. The most courageous woman in the world, because she stood up to the dread King of the North, though it had eventually cost her her life.
"She is in you."
An enormous shadow flew past her, the wind of the passing buffeting her, but she ignored Taryn even as he skidded to a stop and flung himself over the precipice to reach for her hand. She ignored him because she was already out of reach, climbing down into the abyss, feeling with her toes for the ill-conceived edges of rock she was forced to rely on to keep her from plummeting into darkness.
"Anise,"
Taryn said, but she ignored that voice, because if she wasn't the kind of woman who would try to save her aunt, then she might as well let go now. If she was that woman who'd quaked at the fear of death, of failure, and required others to save her, then there was no sense in going on living. But now, like a spark flaring in the dark, she knew who she really was. A woman of the North. A queen of the North. And I fear nothing. She reached her aunt, growling between clenched teeth.
"Grab my ankle."
Zelda shook her head. Her determined expression made it clear there was still plenty of fight in her, but she was a woman of the North, too, and she wouldn't risk her niece's life to save her own.
"Auntie, take my hell-frozen ankle, or I will drag us both down into the depths of this mountain. Don't think I won't."
Despite the danger they were both in, she saw the sparkle in her aunt's dark eyes. Her knuckles were already white, but Anise saw them pale even further, announcing her intentions. Anise steeled herself, tightening her grip, preparing for the added weight. Zelda released her hold on the rocks and reached out. For a moment, Anise thought she'd misjudged the distance, her fingers clawing at empty air, but then she felt the tightness of their grip on her ankles and the weight as her aunt swung free. Anise was almost dragged from the rock, just as she'd promised to do to Zelda. Her fingers ached as she held on, her knees beginning to tremble. But then a portion of the weight was relieved, and she released the breath that had been trapped in her lungs under the strain. Presumably her aunt's toes had found something to stand on.
"Now what?"
Zelda said.
"We climb."
"By the frozen gods,"
Zelda muttered, but she didn't argue, as Anise reached for a hold so small she could barely see it. Anise never thought she would be so glad to see the solid walls and ceiling of the tunnels, but she was. They looked different now, less like a tomb than a corridor limned with possibility. So many of her people were dead. That hadn't changed, and she didn't want to be in denial about the great losses they had suffered. But against all odds, some of them had survived. Not thousands, but hundreds. A bedraggled group of refugees that didn't seem to understand the meaning of the words fail or defeat. Anise was proud of them. The entire column of refugees had crossed the chasm by rigging a rope bridge constructed of leather satchels slung together. They hadn't lost a single soul in the process. As they passed, they'd each looked upon her with awe, but Anise didn't bask in it. Yes, she had shown her own mettle when she'd saved Zelda's life, but that didn't matter to her. All that mattered was that her aunt was alive. "My last living relative except for my villainous uncle," she thought, which was a sobering idea. Things could have gone very differently in the chasm. The Garrick line could have been ended. Once, she might have thought the world would be a better place without the Garricks. Now, however, she knew it would be far worse. "This is my duty, my fate." She might not be fate-marked, but that didn't mean she didn't have a role to play in what was to come. Her aunt did, too, she suspected. Anise stood up, and Terin said, "Not yet. You need to rest." He tried to press on her shoulders to ease her back to the ground, but she swatted them away and pushed him in the chest. "We leave now," she said, barging past him. Behind her, she heard Zelda say,
"You heard the Queen. Move out."
Anise continued to lead, though Terin kept trying to stride ahead of her in case there were any more pitfalls. She shoulder-barged him into the wall a few times, and he gave up, contenting himself with walking abreast. He tried to speak to her thrice, inquiring about whether she was in good health, but she just grunted, and he gave up. She knew they'd laugh about it later, but for now she was of a single concentration, escaping the tunnels. Hours passed in silence. Anise knew they were beyond their usual stopping time. Her mouth was dry, her stomach clenching from hunger, her legs sore, but she refused to quit. And she knew without a doubt in her mind that the northerners behind her wouldn't falter either, not until their legs crumbled beneath them. And then she saw it, up ahead, an arc of light. It wasn't particularly bright, but next to the gloom of the tunnel it might have been a glowing beacon. Anise started to run. Behind her, she heard her people give chase. Toward the light, they went. 41. The Eastern Kingdom, Crow's Nest. Gareth Ironclad. The sun had begun its descent, and, at least to Gareth, seemed to fall far faster than usual.
"You had no choice. You could not remain in Crow's Nest forever, hoping for miracles."
Still, Gareth hated to leave, for he longed for a ray of hope in a world that seemed covered in ash. Desiring to gaze upon the mountain while on its flanks one last time, he steered his horse aside and gestured for his legionnaires to pass. Rising above them, the switchbacked trail seemed reminiscent of the path of his life, crooked and unpredictable. For some reason, he remembered the shepherd he had met when they'd first arrived, the man's casual air of fearlessness. That, in some ways, was a true ray of hope. Greedily, he let his gaze linger on the snow-capped mountains, cloaked in thick grey clouds. He worked his way down their flanks until the snow gave way to formidable black cliffs, and then, nestled beneath them, the hardy stone city of Crow's Nest. He was about to turn away when something caught his eye. A flag was being raised up a pole. Not the crossed sword sigil of the east, which was already flapping in the breeze, but an arrow aimed toward the north. Gareth's heart quickened, as he had never actually seen this flag raised, though he'd learned its meaning as a young boy. An invasion from the north. He dug his heels into his horse's flanks and charged back up the mountain, shouting orders. Anise. She emerged from the tunnel, blinking, her vision assaulted by the light, which was so powerful it left her seeing spots. Others crowded behind her, and she could hear the excitement in their murmurs. But as her vision cleared, her arms shot out to her sides, blocking the way forward.
"What have I done?"
she thought, watching as the line of soldiers charged up the hill toward the mouth of the tunnel, weapons already drawn, slashing the air at their sides. Her options were few. Retreat back into the tunnel, where they would surely be pursued and caught. Fight, right here and now, despite knowing they were exhausted and sorely outnumbered. Or surrender and face the mercy of the East, a people who they'd fought against and killed for decades, long before she was born. Anise stepped forward into the light, just as several of the soldiers skidded to a stop. At least three of them were of Orion descent, and these ones raised bows, training them on Anise's heart. Behind her, Terin said,
"Anise, back away slowly. Get behind me."
She knew he was only being his typical chivalrous self, but she didn't try to hide the venom in her tone as she said,
"No."
"You are our prisoners," one of the Orions said. "Lay down your arms or you will die."
Anise took a step forward, and again her answer was,
"No."
Expert fingers clenched bowstrings as the archers adjusted their aim.
"Last warning," the spokesman said. "You are on Eastern Sovereign land. Any act outside of surrender will be considered an act of war."
Anise lifted her chin and said,
"I am Queen Anise Garrick, ruler of the North and defender of my stubborn people. We have been through fire, ice, and darkness to reach your sovereign lands. We bear weapons, but we shall not use them while in the East, unless provoked. You have my word, as you have my word that we will not hand them over. If it is bloodshed you want, you shall have it."
She heard Terin growl behind her, and she knew he'd released the monster. She took another step forward, and she could see the doubt in the soldier's eyes. She frowned. Why would they doubt themselves, she wondered. They have the numbers, weapons, and strength. Unless... More soldiers poured into the area below them. More arrows pointed in their direction. There were hundreds already and hundreds more coming. Somewhere far below she saw a trail, the telltale shimmer of plate reflecting along it.
Thousands,
she thought.
We've stumbled into an entire army. "So, this is what it comes to,"
she whispered to herself. Her pleas had fallen upon deaf, ironclad ears. To her surprise, she felt no fear, the certainty of fate urging her forward. She drew her Evenstar, stepping carefully down the rocky trail that led to the area now filled with Eastern Legionnaires. She stopped before them, dozens of arrows trained upon her, hands gripping steel, hard eyes burning into her, years of hate in those stares. But still, she sensed something giving them pause. Doubt. But why?
"Well," she said, "who shall be first? At least give me the honour of a fair fight."
The steadiness in her own tone gave her energy.
"I am my mother. I am Zelda."
And, perhaps, she was a little bit of her father, too. The stubborn, fearless part. A commotion arose from the crowd, though she could not determine the cause. But then the ranks of soldiers began to part down the middle, each man and woman stepping aside to create a narrow path wide enough for only a single rider to pass. One such rider galloped through, his clean-shaven face young and fair, the hair atop his helmless scalp of a reddish hue, tangled and messy, almost as if he'd just woken up. He brought his steed to a stop before her. His eyes remained on her the entire time as he swung his leg over his horse's back and dismounted, landing with the practiced ease of one who'd grown up learning the art of equestrian as a child of the North might practice throwing snowballs at her siblings. He stepped forward, closing the gap between them. Anise's hand tensed on her hilt, but he never moved to draw his own weapon.
"I received your stream," he said,
and though she now knew exactly who he was, she detected none of the haughty, regal air she expected.
"Your Highness," she said, "why didn't you respond? A simple yes or no would have sufficed."
He frowned.
"I did, Your Highness. I sent a stream to Darin 6 days hence."
This, more than anything, surprised her.
We left the castle 6 days ago.
The horde pursued you, he said. There was no question in his voice.
Yes. How do you know that?
My scout saw evidence of a struggle. I assumed the worst.
We survived, some of us.
Now you would take us prisoner.
Over my dead body, she added in her head.
Prisoner? No, I have heeded your call. And had you read my stream, you would know my simple answer was 3 letters, not 2.
Yes.
The answer is yes. Queen Anys Garrick, by royal decree, welcome to the East. May you find our hospitality somewhat greater than that of the Horde.
Part 3. Shanty, Roan, Gwen, Raven, Lisbeth, Shay, Rhea, Bane, Whisper, Falcon, Helmuth. The scales of justice are not borne on one man's shoulders alone. No, by necessity they must be supported by all who walk the earth, or there shall never be justice for any of us. Jai Jaru, deceased. 42. The Southern Empire, Fenir. Shanti Parthena, Lord. In the south, it was said the descent into madness could start with something as insignificant as stepping on a slug. Shanti knew nothing about slugs, but she knew about death and loss and struggle. Yes, and the madness of a world sick with an incurable disease. She knew about people worthy of life. Her father, deceased. Her sister, deceased. Her mother, deceased. Jai Jaru. Jai Jaru. When Shanti had met him, she had immediately sensed something in him, something special. To learn of his fate mark, it had changed her, grown a seed of hope into a tree, strong and thick-limbed and now cut down like a mere sapling, kindling to the fires of madness burning its way across the 4 kingdoms. Falcon Hosa was speaking to her, but she heard nothing except the rush of blood through the veins in her temples. Why keep fighting when one kept losing? She knew to voice such a thought, even to her closest friend Sonica Vade, would label her as weak. And she wasn't weak, not by a long shot. She was simply tired, weary to the core of her heart, the marrow of her bones. And, she was beginning to believe, the world was exhausted too. She knew she could have left with the Black Tears when they departed for Calypso, off to find Sonica's long-lost brother, Gat. Sonica had practically begged her, but Shanti had merely turned over in bed and pretended to sleep. It was, perhaps, the worst thing she had ever done. Not for long, she thought, a plan forming in her mind. Falcon was speaking to her again, and this time she unstopped her ears and listened to the end of what he was saying.
Ruler to ruler, perhaps I can recall them, reason with them to return to Fanes, to join forces to fight this great evil.
They were words of hope whispered into a world with none. Shanti nodded along, stripped of any conviction. Yes, Falcon Hosa was a good man, but that didn't change the fact that he needed to die. They all needed to die. That was the only gift Shanti had left to give. After all, death was a mercy in this horrible world.
43. The Southern Empire, Fenir. Roan Lorraine. The stream network was of no use without the proper ink reeds, so Roan was forced to track down an old Phoenician bird keeper who'd been training pigeons as a hobby. He bore a gleam in his watery eyes that seemed 1 part excitement and 10 parts mischief. "Will they fly?" Roan asked him, as he handed over the messages he'd scrawled.
"Yes, but to where is the question?"
Roan drew the scrolls back sharply.
"I thought you said a quip, nothing more," the man said, easing his hand forward toward Roan. "They are intelligent birds. They will reach the destinations you've requested."
Roan sighed. It wasn't like he had a choice. He had to warn Gareth and Raven.
Even Sylo Ren deserved to be warned. 4 more rulers were going to die, whether it was by Bane's hand or not. He handed the messages over and watched as the narrow-eyed man tethered them to his pigeon's feet. 1 for the west, 1 for the east, 1 for Calypso. He'd even prepared 1 for the north, though he knew not where to send it. Darin was the logical place for Queen Garrick and her people to flee toward if the Horde was upon them.
4 rulers. 4.
Lisbeth Lorne and the 2 half-marked waited patiently by his sides, watching as the man coaxed each bird from the cage, cradling them in his rough hands, whispering into their ears, releasing them with a flutter of wings and spray of feathers. They flew first out of the canyons and then beyond sight. Rhone could only hope the messages would be received by the intended audiences, and that they responded in kind. If even some of them travelled back to Fane's, it could change everything. Lisbeth said,
"They will make it."
Rhone glanced at her. Once he looked upon her wispy form, he found it hard to look away. It wasn't just her beauty that captivated him, but the aura that seemed to surround her. He felt nothing romantic toward her, but still, she was a sight to behold, even if her glassy eyes never met his, instead trained on his chest. They always seemed to look directly at where his life mark was painted, invisible. "You can see into the souls of birds?" She nodded.
"Yes, but it would kill them. I was just trying to be hopeful."
Rhone breathed out a laugh. Sometimes he had to remind himself that she was as fresh to this world as Rhea's nameless newborn babe. "Have you managed to draw anything else to you?" he asked. At this, Lisbeth frowned. He could see the frustration in her expression. This was a woman who wielded incredible power, and he could tell that her own inability confounded her like a great runner who'd broken an ankle and was confined to bed rest.
"The skill eludes me."
"You did it once. You will do it again." Somehow, when Rhone was drowning at the bottom of the Well of Truth, a single moment before his lungs filled with water and he breathed in liquid death, she had pulled him from the depths, not with her hands, but with her powerful mind. The only problem? She didn't know how she did it, and she'd been unable to repeat the feat, which they'd begun referring to as drawing. He had 2 of the best minds in the 4 kingdoms helping him research anything that might reference the abilities of the Soulmarked. If nothing else, it kept Lady Windy from meddling in other things, as she was apt to do if she grew too bored. Yila, of course, was assisting her, which mostly meant the young Calypsian girl was doing all the work, while Windy sipped thick, noxious tea.
"Thank you," Lisbeth said,
drawing Rhone back to the present.
"For what?" "For your confidence in me."
Rhone was flabbergasted.
"You saved us all in the bloody canyons. Why wouldn't I be confident in you?"
Her sightless eyes seemed to drift to some faraway place.
"Because I have failed so many times. My own soul is painted with blood."
Rhone was troubled by her words, for though he had no soul-seeing fate mark, he could sense the purity of her soul. "Whatever your past, you've long atoned for it." She gave no indication that she'd heard his words, turning away, seeming to float as she departed, her feet hidden beneath her blue, silky dress. Shearis, one of the half-marked, said,
"We still have the fate-marked. You, Sir Dietrich, Lisbeth. Eric and I can strengthen you when you face the Horde. The Phoenicians will support you as well."
"Bane?" She nodded.
"Yes, we will support Bane too, if you trust him."
"I do." He was surprised by how quickly he affirmed it. But it was true. Bane was fighting for the same thing as they all were, even if it didn't look like it sometimes. "You should tell him that." The truth was, Rhone hadn't seen Bane in a couple days, though it wasn't unusual for the shadowy boy to appear and disappear at a moment's notice. Rhone was worried what he might do when left to his own devices. "He didn't kill Falcon Hoser when he had the chance," he reminded himself. That had to count for something.
"We will," Shay promised. "We could use the Hero Marked's help, too."
"I know," Rhone had answered too quickly. Gwen was on his mind often. He hated that they couldn't talk the way they used to. Whether their words were soft or hard, they'd always been able to speak openly to each other. But now, she was as distant as a star to him.
"Come back to me, Gwendolyn," he thought.
But, like Lisbeth Lorne, he could not draw her to him with only his mind. No, it would take much more than that. 44. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Gwendolyn Storm. Gwendolyn Storm felt naked under the open sky of the desert peninsula of Calyp. What she wouldn't give to climb a tree, preferably one sheathed in iron. However, inside the cavernous pyramid, she felt better, the rocky ceiling providing shade and a sense of comfort. As she watched the red dragon sleep, her massive scaled chest rising and falling with each mighty breath, Gwen wondered whether she would ever see Ironwood again. "You don't have to stay here, you know," Raven said, reading her mind. "This isn't a time for false loyalty, nor for running. You can go home."
"I have no home," Gwen said,
surprised by her own words. Ironwood was her home, wasn't it? Though that was where she longed to be, she sensed it would feel empty without Roan, as it had the last time she was there. And yet she couldn't go back to Fane's either. She couldn't disappoint Roan again. So she was in Calypso, feeling as out of place as a barracuda in a puddle.
"Well, you can borrow mine for now.
Just don't get too comfortable. Eventually I'll make you earn your keep." Gwen's eyes met Raven's and held. It was odd looking upon a Calypsian, a dragon rider and a sands to boot, and not feeling even a shred of animosity. Her fires of revenge had finally been doused. Roan would be proud of her. "Then why can't I go back to him when he needs me the most?"
"Because I'm an all-forsaken fool," she thought.
"Thank you," she finally said, breaking off her stare.
"You're welcome."
"What are you going to do with your aunt?" Gwen asked, wanting to change the subject. Now it was Raven's turn to look uncomfortable.
"Whisper thinks I should execute her."
For once, Gwen found herself agreeing with the girl. Viper Sands was dangerous, and not just because of her name. She committed treason. In most places, the punishment for such a crime is death.
"That's not an answer.
I'm not the Empress, and she's not my aunt."
"But if you were, and she was..."
Gwen didn't hesitate this time. "She would die." Raven nodded, and she seemed resigned to the answer, as if she had expected it all along.
"I know. What she did was unforgivable. She almost ruined everything."
At that moment, Goggin appeared in the doorway, filling the entire frame with his bulk. He was dripping sweat and breathing heavily. It was a long hike from the palace to the pyramid that once housed the Dragonia, now reduced to a single dragon.
"We have visitors," he finally managed to get out.
"Whom?"
"She calls herself Sonica Vade. There are other women with her, too. Warrior types. They claim to have come from Fenir. They said you would be expecting them."
Raven glanced at Gwen, and she nodded.
"Go. You invited them, after all.
Will you be all right?" Gwen's first instinct was always to shun such compassion, but she kept her tone even.
"I'm fine. I am not made of glass."
Raven said, "Then you won't break if I do this." She shoved her hard and then darted away, leaving Gwen sprawled on the rocky floor. Sideways, she saw a single large eye staring at her. The urge to bolt upright surged through her, to draw her bow, to fight this creature of destruction.
"You could try,"
Ciri said, speaking directly into her head.
"But I will win."
"I might surprise you."
"Because of your fate mark? Every dragon is born with a fate mark."
Gwen remembered she didn't need to speak aloud for the dragon to hear her.
"Truly?"
A deep-throated chuckle.
"It's called Dragonfire."
At the reminder, another flower of anger bloomed in her chest. She knew Dragonfire. Dragonfire had consumed Ironwood all those years ago.
"I wasn't there,"
Ciri reminded her.
"When I came to Ironwood, I delivered Raven to your king.
and killed his brother.
I was in chains. I was frightened. Dragons are not meant to be imprisoned. Why do you think we have wings?
Ciri rolled and stretched, her leathery wings curling around her sides. Gwen said, "Why haven't you tried to kill me?" It was a question that had been nagging at her for days.
"Why haven't you tried to kill me? I can feel the vengeance in your heart every time you look upon me."
"Not every time," Gwen thought.
"Most every time."
"Aren't you angry with me? I killed a dragon. Don't you want vengeance, too?" Again, the dragon laughed. "What's so amusing?"
"You think I care that you killed Cronus? I hated that bastard anyway."
Despite herself, Gwen laughed. "A rival?"
"Hardly," the dragon scoffed. "He was all bulk and no brains. I defeated him in the testing time and time again. You did this world a service by killing him. The Dragon Master, too, Shanalin."
"Glad to be of service, then." Ciri rolled over again, her radiant red scales shimmering in the torchlight. It was strange. Gwen had never thought of dragons as beautiful creatures. But now she couldn't deny their allure. Ciri was as breathtaking as she was fierce. "What do you think Raven will do about her aunt?" she asked.
"Raven is like you. Her heart is as big as the sun, but she hides it behind armor as thick as dragon scales. She will do whatever she must to keep her people safe."
"Good," Gwen said. "That is good." 45. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Raven Sands. "Any of the black tears catch your fancy?" Raven teased. She knew Goggin was pining after her, but she loved watching the charming brute squirm. "Any possible wives in their lot?"
"Who?"
Goggin said, playing cool. He extracted a handkerchief from his pocket and dabbed at his broad forehead, which was sheened with sweat. They were travelling back to the city on Guanacback, the long reptilian creatures bouncing with each step. The sun was like a boiling cauldron, making the very air seem to bubble and shimmer with heat. Raven breathed in the hot air, loving every bit of her freedom. After being forced to fight in the pits of Zune, she would never again take anything for granted. The first thing she'd done upon reaching Calypso was to send a royal decree to Zune to shut down the pits, something she should have done the moment she'd become Empress. There would be chaos and backlash, she knew, but eventually the people would find something else to gamble away their coin on. "You know, those gorgeous rebel warriors with the black tears tattooed on their cheeks," Raven said, still trying to get Goggin to rise to the bait. The commander of the Guanero didn't flinch, which Raven couldn't help but appreciate.
"I barely noticed them. I am a changed man. I am no longer looking for another ex-wife."
Raven laughed. "Then what are you looking for?" His eyes met hers, and his was the most serious expression she'd ever seen cross his face.
"A partner in life," he said.
Raven forced her head forward again. "Oh? That's good, Goggin. That's good." It wasn't that she didn't find him entertaining, or unattractive, in a brutish pick-you-up-and-carry-you-to-bed over his shoulder kind of way. In another world, she could even see herself enjoying a life of laughs and fantastic lovemaking with him. But in this world, she had no luxury of romance or happiness. Certainly not now. When a great horde was sweeping across the land, like the plague that had swept across Calip on multiple occasions. And she didn't want to hurt him by giving him hope that there would ever be something more between them. "Goggin?"
"Yes, my Empress."
"Thank you for being you." She met his gaze once more, and she could see the familiar amused sparkle had returned to his eyes.
"You're welcome. Did I ever tell you about my third wife?"
She laughed and settled in for the story, which would carry her all the way into Calypso. After Goggin delivered her to their guests, he stepped back, puffing out his chest. To his credit, his eyes remained trained on the wall, and not on the half-dozen women clad in tight-fitting leathers, sheathed with all manner of weaponry. They were indeed a sight, and Raven was certain they'd turned heads from the moment they entered the city. At least 36 soldiers separated them from the Empress.
"They refused to relinquish their weapons," Goggins said.
"So I see. Let them approach.
Your Highness,
it's fine. They will not harm me." The soldiers reluctantly parted, creating a path. Their hands remained vigilantly on their hilts, however, prepared to defend their Empress at a moment's notice. "Welcome to Calypso," Raven said, as the Black Tears approached. Sonica Vade stepped in front of the others. "Where is my brother?" Raven almost laughed at the woman's audacity, but then she remembered that this woman had struggled for years to free the Phoenician slaves, which made her an ally. So what if she didn't have the best manners? Raven snapped her fingers, and the nearest soldier approached. "Find Gat Vade. Bring him here." When Raven had met Sonica Vade in Fanes, she couldn't withhold what she knew. Family was too important to be kept secret. It didn't surprise Raven in the least that Sonica had made the trek with such haste. "Enjoy your reunion." With that, she departed. It wasn't her family to get involved with. No. She had her own family to deal with. Viper Sands was curled in a ball in the corner of the cell, not moving, seemingly asleep. Raven stepped quietly to where her sister, Whisper, sat with her back to the wall, her blonde hair ragged and uncombed, spilling down her shoulders. She was not asleep, watching their aunt like a hungry hawk, her light brown skin shadowed. The glare that darkened her face was a new expression for the young girl, one she'd only mastered in the last several weeks, starting with the time they'd spent in the fighting pits of Zoon.
"How long has she been sleeping?"
Raven whispered.
"Not long enough," Whisper said,
not breaking her stare.
"Have you made your decision?"
Raven shook her head, and Whisper sighed, exasperated.
"She usurped your throne, abducted us, and tried to kill us in Zoon. What other option is there?"
Raven couldn't help but to think of Roan, of the fervor in his voice as he'd urged her to reconsider her attack on Feria, to stop the cycle of violence. But this was different, wasn't it? She opened her lips to speak her mind, but it wasn't her words she heard, but her aunt's.
"Your naive sister is right, Empress," Viper said.
She still hadn't moved, her body coiled like that of a snake facing away.
"There is only one option, but it's not killing me. Well, it could be, if you are worthy.
Speak plainly, Aunt, for I will not abide your desperate riddles," Raven snapped.
Slowly, languidly, Viper stretched, rolled over, and pushed to her feet. Every step was a saunter, her strong arms hanging loosely at her sides.
"She doesn't act like a prisoner with her fate hanging in the balance," Raven thought. "Why?"
The question was disconcerting, but she hid her fear behind a stony stare not unlike that of her sister.
"You are the second daughter," Viper said. "Your point being, you have no right of precedence to the Empire."
Raven frowned. Her aunt wasn't making sense.
"None of us have right of precedence. Fire had to fight for the Dragon Throne. She won. Then she died. Whisper did not challenge me, so now I am Empress. I don't need precedence."
Viper said.
"Your mother was a bigger fool than I thought."
At that, Whisper flung herself to her feet and flew at the bars, a dagger already out. Viper, however, coolly stepped back, just out of reach, watching with amusement as Whisper slashed at the air, growling like a caged beast. From Raven's vantage point, it was difficult to tell which woman was imprisoned.
"Why was my mother a fool?"
Raven asked, unable to restrain her curiosity. In the shadowy cell, Viper's dark skin looked almost black, her hair like the patches of hoar moss that occasionally grew in the desert.
"Because she didn't teach you our traditional laws. If she had, you would know that only the first daughter has precedence for the throne. Yes, she may be challenged by her siblings, but none else. The second and third daughters hold no such right."
Raven had never heard of any such law, and wasn't certain what to make of it.
"Meaning?"
meaning you may also be challenged for the throne. By whom? Anyone off the street? She scoffed.
Whisper had pulled back through the bars, but she continued to grip her knife, prepared to attack if Viper stepped closer.
Not anyone. Any sands.
Raven froze.
You. You had your chance to sit the dragon throne, and you lost to my mother. Must I remind you, Aunt? Then you tried to steal it, and you lost again. And now you would deign to cling to ancient laws?
The law is the law, Viper said, a confident expression unchanged.
Not even an empress can change it. Not easily, anyway. So you say. Alas, I cannot take you at your word. Contact Citadel. They will confirm what I'm saying. Until then, it would be best not to do anything rash, like kill me.
She looked pointedly at Whisper.
I hereby declare a formal challenge for the Calypsian Empire. If you kill me, you might as well kill yourself, too.
Whisper held up her blade.
The only problem... No one knows of your challenge, Auntie. Who's to say you ever issued it?
The deadly promise in Whisper's tone sent a chill through Raven, and she was certain her sister would kill their aunt in cold blood if she had the chance.
Oh, sister, I am sorry I couldn't protect you from the harsh reality of this world. I have an associate,
Viper said.
An associate who will make public my claim in 2 days hence. So if I'm dead...
Her aunt didn't need to finish the threat. She knew how seriously her people took the law. If Raven or Whisper were involved in the unlawful death of one who'd made a lawful claim on the throne, their lives would be forfeit too. Then again, any of Viper's soldiers from the fighting pits who were loyal to her had also been imprisoned. Unless one or more of them had pretended to turn against her.
Fine, Raven said. I shall contact Citadel and get an answer. If I must, I will fight you. And I will kill you.
For the first time in days, Whisper offered her a smile, full of a harsh beauty that Raven had to admit was becoming on her. Viper, however, only laughed, the sound echoing after them down the corridor.
Whisper said, "Now what?"
"We wait," Raven answered. They sat in a small, deserted library, flipping through rarely read tomes full of dust. The citizens of Calypso weren't exactly scholars, save for the ones who travelled to Citadel to study, like Raven's other aunt, Windy. Giving voice to her thoughts, she said,
"I wish Windy were here. She would know the answer."
Raven had already sent an urgent stream to Citadel, and hoped one of Windy's students would be able to find the answer swiftly. Sending a stream to her aunt in Fanes was impossible. They no longer had any inkreads from the Canyon City, and she hadn't thought to harvest any before they left on Dragonback.
"Perhaps I am a fool, like Viper says," she thought. "We must do something," Whisper said.
"I agree," Gwen said. "But you might not like my answer." The Orion had joined them shortly after they arrived, and Raven had told her everything, much to Whisper's chagrin. For some reason, her sister couldn't bring herself to trust the woman, even though she'd done everything in her power to help them escape from Zune and reclaim the Empire. Now, Whisper raised her eyebrows in surprise.
"Tell me,"
Raven said.
"She could be bluffing about having an associate," Gwen said, her dark pupils tightening into cat-like slits.
The gold band around them was so narrow it could barely be seen.
"Or not," Raven said. "Either way, leave it to me to find out who it is." "And then what?"
Gwen didn't respond, only looked at Whisper, who nodded.
"No," Raven said. "I won't allow it." "Are you listening to yourself, sister?" Whisper said. "Viper tried to kill us. Why show her mercy now? If she's right about the law... The law doesn't matter. The world has gone mad. All that matters is that you sit the dragon throne, and that we face our enemies in full strength."
Raven couldn't argue with that, but it didn't change the answer.
"We will wait for a response from Citadel," she said.
Across from her, Gwen tapped the table.
"At least let me determine the identity of her associate," she said. "I won't harm whomever it is, but the information could prove to be...
valuable. It was a fair compromise, Raven knew. Plus, the Orion was right.
Fine, she said.
Someone cleared their throat from the doorway, and all three women turned sharply toward the sound. Gat Vade stood before them, leather straps crisscrossed over his muscular chest and abdomen. His narrow Phoenician eyes gave no indication as to the thoughts churning through his head. Raven had granted him immunity after he'd turned against Viper, claiming she had made false promises to him, namely that she would help the Terran slaves, a promise she never intended to keep.
Vade, Raven said, your sister is here in Calypso.
His eyes widened slightly, giving away his surprise.
Sonica?
There was awe in that single name. Raven knew how long he'd been separated from his sister, though she didn't know all the circumstances behind their separation.
Yes, she's looking for you. Goggin was supposed to find you.
I haven't been easy to find.
He took a step forward.
So it seems, Raven said. Why is he not running off to locate his sister? Why is he here at all? She wondered.
You do not need to search for Viper's associate, he said.
He took another step forward, drawing the dual short blades from his hip scabbards. Gwen was on her feet in an instant, knocking her chair over. Whisper too, her own weapon already out. Raven, however, remained sitting, staring at the man. Not once since turning on Viper had he threatened her, and he'd had plenty of opportunities. She didn't trust him exactly, but she didn't fear him either. There was something about him that spoke of loyalty and honour, though she knew those qualities were rare and rarer in these times. Still, she owed him the opportunity to speak his mind.
Why not? Raven said. Do you know his identity?
He dropped his blades.
Yes, it's me. And I've already passed the information to a dozen others. You will fight Viper in the arena. There was sorrow in his every word, most of it packed into the final two.
I'm sorry.
You bastard,
Whisper growled. 46. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Gwendolyn Storm. Gat Vade had been chained and taken to the dungeons. The stream from Citadel had arrived not an hour later, confirming the truth of the traditional law granting Viper the right of challenge for the Empire.
The hits just keep coming, Gwen thought,
feeling bad for Raven. The woman, who was nothing like Gwen had expected her to be, had been through a lot in her short life, but she'd endured, a quality Gwen could appreciate. She wanted to help her. If they didn't secure the Dragon Throne now, the Horde might destroy the Four Kingdoms before they had a chance to muster a defense.
I can find those he told, Gwen said. I can find them all. No one will know Viper challenged you. No one will remember some old law.
There was no fear in Raven's eyes as she turned to meet Gwen's.
I will know. I will remember.
Whisper was gone, muttering threats under her breath, leaving them alone in Raven's personal quarters. The large, luxurious space was open to the breeze, privacy provided only by a curtain of threaded guanac bones which rattled against each other from time to time. An enormous bed filled the center of the room, while a roofless washing area was lit by the sun on the opposite side. Raven sat at a small table while Gwen stood, pacing. She stopped now, faced the Empress.
You don't have to do this. I must.
Gwen marveled at the change in her opinion of the Calypsians. Yes, there were those who met and exceeded her preconceived notion that they were a bloodthirsty, savage people, Viper, for example. But so many were kind-hearted, strong, courageous. Like Raven, who even in the face of her potential death appeared as stolid as the nearby pyramids.
How different the world might be if everyone broke bread with their enemies once in a while.
I will support your decision either way, Gwen said, though it shall be difficult not to intervene.
You cannot, Raven said sharply.
I know. Promise me.
Those two words were not spoken with the command of an empress, but with the fervor of a friend.
Is that what she is to me?
Gwen wondered.
A friend?
Could an Orion ever be friends with the Sands?
Yes, she thought. And that simple answer, she believed, would have made Roan proud of her. "I promise," she said. Raven nodded in thanks.